From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. It's Thursday, November 30th, and here are today's headlines. Law enforcement officials continue to investigate whether to bring hate crime charges against a man accused of shooting three college students in Burlington. Two of the victims were Palestinian Americans, and one was Palestinian. But recent history suggests obtaining a hate crime conviction in Vermont is difficult. State law requires prosecutors to show the defendant was motivated in part or in whole by bias. That can be complicated if the defendant does not make statements during the alleged crime. Gary Scott is the former director of Fair and Impartial Policing for Vermont State Police, and he says it can be challenging to see cases where it appears that bias played a role, but there isn't enough evidence to prove it.
We all sort of feel it and know that that is what happened, and that's what systemically has been happening for a long time, but now really putting that into, you know, in language that the law can understand it and then prosecute on it that's the gap we're still in, and we haven't really cleaned up really well.
Prosecutors have filed 93 hate crime charges since 2018 and have secured only a handful of convictions. State Treasurer Mike Pichek announced a new program this week he says will save flood-hit municipalities millions of dollars in avoided loan interest payments. It can take more than a year for cities and towns to receive reimbursements from FEMA for damage to roads, bridges, and public buildings. Pichek says that means they have to take out loans to begin those recovery projects.
And they have bank loans on their books for 8 or 9%. So that's going to cost their taxpayers money. That's going to delay their rebuilding efforts and their recovery efforts.
Pichek says Vermont will use money on hand in the state treasury to underwrite $15 million in low-interest loans for municipalities that have taken on flood-related debt. He says the program will save towns and cities an estimated $3.5 million in avoided interest payments. The Vermont State Colleges system has found a new chancellor. Dr. Elizabeth Mock is currently serving as president of Bethany College in Kansas. She'll step into her new role overseeing Vermont State University and the Community College of Vermont on January 1st. Mock has also held faculty and leadership positions at Pennsylvania's Bloomsburg University. She steps into the Vermont State Colleges system after Vermont State Administration announced wide-ranging cuts to the newly merged school. Students have since called for the elimination of the chancellor's office to save costs, that according to V.T. Digger. Mock will replace outgoing chancellor Sophie Zadatny. A Vermont man has been nominated as one of CNN's 10 Heroes of the Year with the chance of winning $100,000. Adam Pierce is co-founder of Love Your Brain, an organization that supports people with traumatic brain injuries. His brother, Kevin, a snowboarder and Olympic hopeful, suffered from a traumatic brain injury in 2009. Yesterday on Vermont Edition, Pierce spoke with host Michaela LaFrac about the financial challenges people with traumatic brain injuries often face.
It's critical because it's one of the most expensive public health challenges in the world. So bringing exposure to it for us feels like in a really exciting moment. All of our programs are free, so we rely on donations from an incredibly generous community.
Pierce received $10,000 for placing in the top 10. Online voting will continue until December 5th, with a winner to be announced on December 10th. Coming up, an alarming number of residential care facilities for older Vermonters have been closing down. Vermont Public's Nina Keck has that story after this. This summer, the Loretto Home, a 57-bed residential care facility that had been operating in Rutland since 1904, announced it was closing. Administrators blamed ongoing staffing shortages and low Medicaid reimbursement rates. They said caring for low to moderate income older Vermonters at the facility was no longer sustainable. And they're not alone. A new analysis by Vermont Public has found that 35 licensed residential care facilities that cared for older Vermonters have closed since 2018. Reporter Nina Keck says losing so many beds is worrying advocates for older Vermonters, especially those with limited means. She spoke about it with our colleague, Jen Jarecki.
Nina, are all these residential care facilities closing for the same reasons as the Loretto Home?
I wasn't able to speak with administrators at every facility that closed, and some may have simply reached the point where it was time for them to retire. But I think from my reporting, what's happening in the residential care sector mirrors a lot of what we're seeing across the board in healthcare more broadly. Since the pandemic, it is just so much harder to staff these facilities, to find nurses and other care providers who will work a demanding schedule. Residential care facilities are open 24/7. You need staff on weekends, overnights, holidays. And that's difficult. And because many facilities have had to hire more costly traveling nurses to provide care, that's skewed their budgets at the same time they're dealing with rising costs for fuel and food and everything else. And add on top of that what many have said has been a historically low Medicaid reimbursement rate. And I think all of that together, for a lot of these, especially the small residential care homes, it just made for a business model that was not sustainable and also probably really exhausting.
Stepping back a bit, Nina, will you describe the residential care facilities we're talking about for listeners?
Yeah, these are places that are licensed by the state to provide a certain level of live-in care, and they include assisted living facilities, but they're a step down from nursing homes or skilled nursing facilities, which provide the highest level of round-the-clock care for people. Assisted living facilities tend to be larger and offer residents maybe private suites with their own bathroom and sitting area. Residential care homes tend to be a little bit more communal. You might have your own bedroom, but share a bathroom, share a kitchen and other living spaces. And the level of care in all of these facilities can vary. Depending on the individual, the care levels can kind of go up on a tier-by-tier basis.
You said that low Medicaid payments were a big part of the reason why so many facilities have had to close their doors. Nina, will you explain how Medicaid pays for long-term care?
Well, it's complicated, and I'm not an expert, but I'll do my best. So many people think mistakenly that Medicare, the federal health insurance for Americans 65 and older, pays for long-term care. And Medicare does cover some nursing home care in some very specific short-term instances, like after surgery for rehab. But Jen, when we talk about residential care or assisted living, where a person's going to live for months or years in a place, unless you're lucky enough to have long-term care insurance, most people pay for that care out of pocket until they die or until their money runs out. And when your money runs out, that's when Medicaid steps in as a safety net. And Medicaid is the state federal healthcare program for folks that can't otherwise afford healthcare. And hopefully, the facility that you are living in will accept Medicaid as a payment after your money runs out, and not all do. And facilities in Vermont that do take Medicaid say historically the rates haven't kept up with rising costs, especially those brought on by the staffing shortage, which I think is a big reason we're seeing so many close.
So how are these closures impacting older Vermonters?
Many of the local residential care homes that closed accepted Medicaid, and without them, low to moderate income Vermonters just have fewer options, and many may have to travel out of their community for affordable care, which is never ideal. Many are also confronting the reality that they can't afford residential care, that they have too much money to qualify for Medicaid, which has a very low income threshold. At the same time, they don't have enough money saved to pay $70,000 or $80,000 a year or more for residential care. And so they're in this really a no-win donut hole. Rosemary Green is the executive director of the Southwestern Vermont Council on Aging. She says she gets calls about long-term care options all the time. And she says the staffing shortages that are impacting assisted living in residential care homes are also making it harder for people who want to stay home and hire home-based services. They're in short supply and expensive as well. So Rosemary Green said older Vermonters are really getting hit on all sides right now.
It's a crisis, and I think that the more that we can bring it to the frontal focus of people, I think people are going to understand that, hey, we need to do something. Everybody ages. Everybody has parents. Everybody has aunts and uncles who are aging.
It really does sound like a crisis, Nina. Is there any good news for Vermont's residential care facilities?
Well, I guess I would answer that yes and no. Vermont lawmakers this year raised the Medicaid reimbursement rate for residential care 79%, which is significant. And lawmakers also boosted the rate facilities receive for what's called enhanced care by 4%. So lawmakers get it, and everybody I talked to cheered that they raised the rates. But they also told me, people that run residential care facilities, that it may be too little, too late. Helen Laban heads the Vermont Healthcare Association, which advocates for Vermont's residential nursing, assisted living, and residential care homes. And this is what she said.
But if there isn't continuous growth in the reimbursement rates, if you're looking at a long-term care residential provider, like who I represent, once someone is in your residence, they're in your residence. That's an ongoing commitment. So if you don't know that the rates are going to continue to increase to keep pace with costs, then it's still a financial risk and a problem.
And she said there's concern because the state is dealing with the after effects of flooding and the high cost associated with recovery from that. And so she's worried that there may not be continued increases made to that Medicaid rate. But state officials are hopeful, at least, that this may bring some stability.
Nina, you and Vermont Public data journalist Corey Doxer have tried to map out care in the state. Why do that? And what information is available on our website?
Mostly, we wanted to try and make it easier for older Vermonters who need residential care to see what's available, you know, to see what's out there. And when we started this project, the information we found online was often out of date or inaccurate. The state's website, I found, had a lot of jargon and wasn't terribly user-friendly or helpful. And it was hard to find just how much places cost. A lot of them don't list their prices or whether they take Medicaid or not. So that's the kind of information we tried to gather and map out. Not every facility called us back, so there may be some gaps. But we hope it's a starting point for folks and that it'll be helpful.
That was reporter Nina Keck speaking with host Jen Jarecki. You can read more of Nina's reporting and check out the assisted living facility map on our website, vermontpublic.org. Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Liam Elder Connors, Peter Hirschfeld, Adia Golston, and Michaela Lafrac. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Talk to you tomorrow.